Hi, welcome to Agile Self-Development, the podcast that gives you a roadmap for personal growth and self-improvement for your body, mind, and spirit. Hi, I'm Helene Coppell, and together we'll take this journey to becoming our best self, one version at a time. Trauma. That's a big word these days, and no one seems to be immune from it. I've dealt with my own trauma, childhood obesity and bullying, cancer and chemo, the inability to carry a baby, divorce and co-parenting, the list goes on and on. And I know I'm not alone. My guest today is Marnie Goldman, author of True to Myself, Peace, Love, Marnie. As the daughter of a drug-addicted mother, Marnie survived a life of depression, ADHD, childhood PTSD, anxiety, and a leukemia diagnosis. In her book, part memoir and part inspiration, Marnie takes readers on a journey from unimaginable pain to physical, mental, and emotional well-being. Today, Marnie Goldman is the host of the Peace Love podcast and works with people all over the world to help them transcend and heal emotional traumas. And now, on with the interview. Marnie Goldman, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Now, I always like to start at the very beginning. We're talking about trauma, and I'm going to ask you about trauma drama, which I saw on your website. Can you share a bit about your journey and path of healing that brought you to the point to write a book about it?
How much time do we have? Seriously, no, you don't understand. Not to be cliche, but I was four months old. My biological father went out for cigarettes. He never came back. So right there, not realizing it, let's start with our abandonment issues. Then my mother had gotten remarried when I was maybe 16 months old. So he adopted me legally. I was like a gift with purchase. Okay. If I want to put it that way. And then when I was 8 years old, you know, so I'm paraphrasing, but let me just tell you, it's a lot. 8 years old, they did insurance fraud, my mother and father. He went to jail. We lived in Miami Beach at the time. I was just told, your father's gone, we're moving. So the only life that I knew at that time was in Miami Beach. Now I'm in North Miami Beach with just my brother, my mother, no explanation, internalizing it. Back then, nobody said, let's go to Dr. Drucker and talk about this. It was just, we don't talk about it. Then I went to sleepaway camp in Hendersonville, and everybody's rejoicing for visiting day. And they came up to me in 1980 and they said, your mother's not here. She got remarried and you're moving. Oh, no, that's just once. I'm 10. I'm 52. Okay.
Right.
So they're like, your mother's married. She's not coming. Okay. So I'm watching all the other families hugging and I'm just in the bus going to Carowinds or something. And the special field trip with the three other.
Right. The kids who have no guests go on a field trip.
The token field trip. So then the end of camp, I'm going again with following the children. They go, you're not going on the plane to Miami. When your mother got married, you're now moving to Las Vegas. Okay. So now we go to Las Vegas. She's with her third husband. We're there for 2 months, August to October. I know now they ran a gambling casino, hooker, hotline kind of thing. We were never allowed to touch the other phones. And my mother had always been connected. His name was Milton. He was part of the Jewish mafia. No matter what my mother did, he took care of her. She was with a boyfriend. He still took care of her. So I was like 9 years old going to Vegas and like with Steve Wynn before Wynn was Wynn, you know. Really adult life. So when now it was October and the cops told them, got to move out of Vegas. Something happened. So now we moved to Philadelphia. So now I'm 10 years old, 1980, and I go to Philadelphia and I love this town. And my mother and her husband, they owned a deli restaurant, but he used to hit my mother and Mafia Milton blew the restaurant up. I was at camp.
Wow.
Yeah. So now I'm at camp thinking I'm going back to Philadelphia. They're like, Marnie, you're going on the bus to Miami. You're going on the plane back to Miami. Your mother's back in Miami or whatever. Yeah. So now it's just living in North Miami Beach with just my mother, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm 17 and I was 16 when my mother started doing crack. I did not know she was doing crack. I was very naive. I saw her, you know, going down, but I was naive. I thought crack was like cocaine sprinkled in a joint. Like I didn't know when you said smoking.
Right.
So now I'm 17 is where I start my book. We were thrown out of our apartment in Aventura, which, you know, the condo, And then we were at 167, the Golden Glades Interchange. It was a Howard Johnson.
I was going to say, you went to 163rd Street Mall like the rest of the kids, right?
So when I went to high school, the few days I did, I went there, exactly. So now it was a little further down. There was a comedy club there that night. So we get thrown out of our apartment. We go to a Howard Johnson's. I go see a comedy club, a comedy show. And that comedy show, in the midst of trauma, saved me. I always laughter. No matter how horrific my life is, I got to use laughter from Joan Rivers when I was 10 years old. So ironically, I was put in a comedy club when I was left pretty much homeless. So now that night, the next night, we are kicked out of the Howard Johnson's and my mother's boyfriend, Hollywood Boulevard in 95, we stop for gas, pulls me out of the car, literally physically throws me from the car, drives away, this is 1987, with all my belongings, him and my mother. What am I going to do? There's no text, there's no Uber. What am I going to do? So I go to a payphone. I ask the guy for a quarter. And my aunt, who's very fancy schmancy in Miami, Miami Beach, lives across from Joe's, you know, millionaire, very, you know, never wanted to help me. She would not let me live with her. So the week after my grandmother died, and I go back to the house for Shiva, my mother was not allowed. This is now I get thrown out the same week. My grandmother dies. Funeral, Shiva. My cousin, my step cousin, Lisa, said something. And Jerry, my step uncle, said, get out. I'm like, get out where? Get out. Leave the apartment. Leave the Shiva. I'm like, I have no home. So in 1 week, I lost my 17th birthday, 1987, right here. Okay. That's just one night. I have years of this stuff. So my life was just, I don't know what typical is. There's no such thing as normal. But what most people crave in life, mother, father, brother, sister, home, I never had that. So it was like, I used to look and say, when I grow up, I just want to live in like Emerald Hills or whatever, just a neighborhood. To me, that personified happiness. And you have your little white picket fence and you're fine, not realizing we all have to be fine on the inside. We can go anywhere. So after not knowing what to do, I go to New Orleans to live with my brother. Oh, let me back up. It's now Thanksgiving. My birthday was in May 87. Now it's Thanksgiving. And my aunt, the one that wouldn't help me, lives in the Jockey Club at that time. Do you know, that was like, okay, thank you.
It was like a dream. I remember my ex-husband's like, when he would speak about someone, they live in the Jockey Club, like hoity-toity.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that's where my Sunday afternoons at 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, my entire life was at the Jockey Club. So my grandfather, the one after my grandmother died, I'm now living with him in November. So he decides to take my clothes and put them in the dumpster behind his house. I call my aunt from the Jockey Club from North Miami to North Miami Beach. Please help me. He's throwing away my clothes. She drives up, 20 minutes? And she looks at me and she goes, thank you for ruining my Thanksgiving. So my existence, just my breath, my oxygen is now bothering her. So this is what I'm growing up with. So at 17, I was never loved by a father, which is why I probably was promiscuous and lost my virginity at 14. Well, he said he loved me. I mean, it's, you know, so now I'm in New Orleans. It's horrible. I could have graduated, but school was not a priority. I was dating, or this guy I knew from Miami came to get me in New Orleans. He was a compulsive gambler. I did not know the severity, but he was also a physical abuser. And we went to Orlando. We slept on a floor. I mean, he would leave me on the balcony, punch me. So I'm already only 19, and that's just nothing. I need to do, like, literally, I'm a trilogy. It's not
right,
even
right.
It's a trilogy.
When did you know a change was needed from you?
Not until I was 47 years old. Lifetime. So then I get married and then intermission. Right. My husband was through, and we lived in Aventura together at the same time, both in very unhappy marriages. I got married because my first husband, I was 20 years old. His family owned Santa's Enchanted Forest. Not him, his cousins, the Shekels. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, his uncle's at the Jockey Club. So I forced my way at 20 years old to marry Dean because he gave me a roof over my head at 20 years old.
Right.
So it was never a marriage of love. And Jay, my husband, was married for marriage of convenience. So it was just the Cupid hit his thing and we met at the JCC playing softball.
Oh, okay.
Love at the JCC. And we just started a relationship. I got pregnant. it was a very scandal back then, you know, 23 years ago, 24 years ago in Aventura.
Right.
His ex-wife was a divorce attorney, which mistake, because she was not happy. But everything happens for a reason. You know, his daughter just turned 28, still will not speak to him. So it's sad. It's
his daughter?
His daughter.
Son? Oh, okay.
Jay's daughter, Ashley, from his marriage when we had our affair, never 10 years old. She found out like the story and she's never been to our house or saw us ever again. Won't talk to him. She wasn't invited to his bat mitzvah, nothing. And it's sad that a mother would do that. But having an affair was the most excruciating because I don't know how to have things in moderation. It's either I love with all my heart or I hate. It's either all or nothing. So having this man drive away from me, it was taking every emotion and every trigger of anyone who ever left me. And I went berserk. Like when this was before texting and we had beepers, that was it.
So there
FaceTime, we're talking 1999.
Right.
So it was so hard. I had a baby with this man and we were not married. So it was excruciating. And at 47, I'm going to fast forward a whole bunch.
I was going to say, did you ever go to therapy until?
I did not. I went to therapy to get diet pills, I think it was at the time, prescribed and or whatever it was. I have a problem eating. Never addressed any issue. I was always told I'm lazy, crazy, you're stupid. Do you ever shut up? Do you ever move? I mean, I was insulted.
Yeah.
I went to, like we were saying, North Miami Beach High School. It was 1985, December, right before Christmas break. And I went upstairs in the high school and there were hundreds of papers. And I write about this in the book. It looked like color war broke out and
everywhere.
And I pick up the paper and it says 161 ways to describe Marnie M. And I'm looking at it. I go, wait, that's me. Like it dawned on me. 161 ways. That stuck with me a lifetime.
Lifetime. Wow.
But looking back, I wish there was someone like me in the world saying, go get help. You're not alone. You know, reach out. Everybody poo-pooed mental health because of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Nobody wants to be institutionalized. So mental health today, I'm getting, you know, I talk about it like the weather and people look at me like I'm a freak. Like, how are you saying you're depressed? You don't get out of your bed or you didn't leave your house or you didn't take a shower. I'm like, because it's, you're not alone. When I heard Kate Spade died of suicide, that was when I went to my doctor. I had been put on Adderall. My daughter was 16 and I took her to the psychiatrist because she had full out ADHD. Listening to the questions, I'm like, for me, I'm like, I'll do that. I'm like, can I make an appointment? And she was like, Marnie, I can't diagnose you without being a patient, but you're full out ADHD. So when I... I was a poster child. So when I went on Adderall, for the first time, it was like a Claritin commercial. Everything was now clear. The fog was gone. I was like, how disorganized am I? And look at my house, and it was falling apart. And all of a sudden, I just wound up. I mean, and really became, I stopped doodling. My drawers were organized, but I was angry. I was angry because I realized now, look what had happened in my life. I was putting all of that blame and anger on my husband without communicating, saying it's not you, it's my thing. You know, it was this that turned into a volcanic. It was hard. It was oozing out of Florida. It was so bad. And then Kate Spade died and of suicide. And that's when I said, you know what, this is my wake up call because I kept saying, why am I here? I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. It's such a that helpless dark hole that I know that I have the potential to get into, I fight every day not to go to.
Right.
And so it was very hard. And
I want to pause there because I do want to say that it's so much more common today for mental health, especially with what we just went through with the pandemic. This mental health issues are just all over the place right now. But a lot of us put on a brave face and you would never know. So I just want that thought out there that don't dismiss that the person who's smiling is not crying on the inside. You know, we're all going through something.
And that's when I decided present day January 2019, I was so depressed. I mean, fetal position crying on my bathroom floor. And my son, who was in a special needs school, this mother like shamed me. We're not all privileged like you. And I'm thinking, honey, I have been sleeping on a floor. And I'm like, is that how people perceive me? Don't judge a book by its friggin' cover.
Right. You have no idea.
So then I went on Facebook Live, which I never did or do. And I made a video just saying, hi, everybody. I just want you to know I suffer from depression, anxiety, and I listed everything. I go, when you see people, I mean, I am the light of a party. I mean, I am on the table dancing. But it was all, I can turn it on. I can turn it on and then nobody sees what really goes on. And I said, that's why you have to be kind. Be kind, be kind, be kind. And my way of rage, I used to say the most venomous things. I would go for your jugular with words. And then I, and actually present day, a few weeks ago, this lady came up to me in Cooper City and she said, your dog doesn't stop barking. I can't stand your dog. Or she's like, we have to work here. Your dog barks all the time and just going on and on. I said, I'm so sorry that you're angry like this. I said, you must be having a really bad day and it's okay that you want to get it out with me. That's fine. Because normally I would have told her to go F herself and I would have just come. But who knows what trigger, what thread she was.
Right. What did she go through that day to set her off? Yeah, I'm more likely to implode than explode on anybody else's. I'm more likely to beat myself up.
Right? I wouldn't do that to her because I know I've been on that thread and somebody could have looked at me the wrong way and I could have gone that way or I could have gotten a smile and I went that way. So I smile, I'm kind to everybody. There isn't a soul on this earth I would ever be cruel to because of the amount of pain that I went through. Excruciating when your family doesn't want you. I mean, I didn't stand a chance genetically and geographically where I grew up. I mean, everybody was there.
I like to say, now I'm not always perfect and I've not always been this way, but because of my, let's say, experiences as an overweight female, my thing is never criticize another woman's appearance.
Got to tell you too about Nancy, the aunt and my mother, they've been glamorous. I was weighed at 13 every Monday morning because of my weight. So I was 19 years old before I married the guy, Dean. I weighed maybe 170 pounds and I was wearing a bathing suit. He goes, not to be rude, but you can lose a few pounds. So then I went to the other spectrum, started starving myself.
Like people think that we don't know we're overweight and they have to tell us.
Like, thank you. And then with each child, I gained 80 pounds. So I was 200 pounds each time I gave birth. I mean, so the words that were said at me at 16, I remember fat whore was one of them. And so I've had this weight issue, an eating disorder my entire life. It's either I'll eat everything. And then I was addicted to laxatives because the shame you would feel.
When are you coming back to Florida? We got to hang out. We're like the same person.
It's a different. Obsessed. No, you understand. I was thinking, I was so bored. I'm like, I have no friends because nobody makes me laugh, but I adore you. Like, where have you?
Oh, thank you. We didn't even need this. We're besties already. Okay. So wait, when did you start writing?
3 years ago. It was the summer of 2019. Somebody was just, this actor I had met was just nasty and treated me like I was just a disgusting piece of meat. And I said, you know what? Fuck it. Excuse my language. I cannot stand people thinking I'm just a ditz. I'm telling my story, which I should have known. I mean, I wanted to write a book since I was 20. Now you add almost, you know, I'm 50 here now, so 30 more.
And it's not easy with ADHD to sit down and write a book.
Nope, it was not. It was years of journals and knowing situations. But looking back, there's a lot of accountability I could have taken at the time instead of blaming, you know, my husband or my circumstances or my mother and realizing this is my situation. And so it was, so I wrote the book in June. I started in June and it was finished 3 months. And then we sell our house in Cooper City. You want to talk about full circle moments? We sell our house in Cooper City. What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? You know, it was a nice size house. So I never thought I'd live in Aventura again ever because of what happened to me.
Right.
The years with my daughter, which is a whole nother chapter when she was little. And we find an apartment and it was in Aventura. It would overlooked it was in the middle of every building I've ever lived in my life surrounded. I was like, I was thrown out of that building. I was evicted from that building. Well, I am surrounded full as I'm writing my book. So talk about full circle moments. I was on the streets. And now here I am in this penthouse. I mean, it's not as elaborate as it sounds, but overlooking, I was thrown out of there. I met my ex-husband there. He divorced me over there. I mean, it was trauma after trauma, like in the middle of a donut is what it was.
Right. You've come a long way, baby.
That, exactly right. So I'm like, now I know why I'm living here. And then COVID happened. I got divorced through COVID. But that moment, I realized I've come full circle. So writing my book, I was like, wait, I just wrote a chapter about that building right there. I mean, it was really hard. So then when the book came out, I reread it. I sat down. I'm like, now my inner 10-year-old is hysterical. And I'm like, it's okay, Marnie. It's okay. Like the visiting day and all that stuff. And it depressed me. And then COVID. So I had no oomph to want to promote my book at all. I could barely survive. So it's taken up until this summer, I'm going to say, to really go full forward with everything. Like, I've been doing my podcast and I'm like, buy my book, but I didn't have enough confidence 100% to put myself out there completely. And it was the best thing I could have done.
So let's talk. In the book, you tell the story of your journey and then healing.
I find the good after every chapter. And how could you have, and I ask yourself, you ask yourself questions. How would you have handled this situation? Is there anybody in your life that only loved you for this reason or, you know, judged you for this and that? How would you handle this situation? So it's a good reference, but everything sums up in a positive.
What do you hope that the reader takes away?
Resilience. When people read my book by chapter 3, I tell them, if you're not moved by the third chapter, I will clean your house for a year. I mean, people, it doesn't matter what age, it's just, it gives people appreciation for what they have, for their family, for the blessings that we take for granted, a house, a bed, a friend, you know, things like that. When people think it's the end of the road, I compare life to Pac-Man. When you play Pac-Man, you get the little pellets. And when you hit the wall, he doesn't just sit there. He backs up and keeps going. And if the monster comes, it goes a little faster. But Pac-Man, you don't give up. We try. And that's like life. I tell people, I have to believe in the universe 100%. I have 1,000% belief that the universe has my back. No matter how, whatever happens, if I'm supposed to meet Oprah tomorrow and
Gabby Bernstein, are you a fan?
I'm quoting her. Thank you. My spiritual stamina, because of her, that's what made me believe. It was like, wow, the universe has had my back and picked me up. Yeah. How can I not believe it? How do I not surrender completely? Because I'm supposed to meet you and do this interview. Out of all the people, you're in my backyard. So things happen for the craziest reasons. And we don't know right now, our daily moments, we have no we don't realize how it can impact us down the road. Oh, that's the dude I met at the gas station or whatever. You never know.
And also that we're not alone, right? You and I grew up very differently, yet we have a lot of similarities. I went to sleepaway camp when you talked about color war. There are people who are like, what the heck is color war? Right? But it's like my greatest achievement was I was color war general. Yeah. Like, you know, it's a big deal. And I had the, you know, when I came down to Miami, I spent a lot of years in the North Miami Beach area. And my camp, by the way, had a lot of kids from North Miami Beach up in upstate New York. I went to a weight loss camp because I have eating issues my whole life as well. And offline, we'll talk names to see if we cross, because I think I'm a year older than you. I just turned 53.
We could sit and do geography all day.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but I want to go into the term trauma drama.
As dramatic as my book is, that's how traumatic it is. It's some simple situations in life. A bar mitzvah it turns out to be something devastating. You cannot make, I'm on a different hemisphere, a different planet with my situations. It's like, you don't just break an ankle, your whole body breaks. And I use the analogy that I fell apart like a disco ball, a Studio 4 disco ball, Studio 54 disco ball. And I put myself back together, a bunch of pieces. And it's possible, because we don't get a do-over in life. It's not a dress rehearsal. No one's going to say cut. You can go back to last week and do it over again. It doesn't happen. And when I was depressed, I missed out years. When I missed my daughter's last cheer game, I never missed a performance of hers. Nothing. I could not get out of bed. When I would weigh myself, it was so horrible. If I went over a certain number, I wouldn't talk to my children. I would scream at them. I would feel disgusting and worthless. They all said 120 something on it. I mean, it's so, I battle it every day, all the time.
I haven't gotten on the scale because I went on a cruise and I don't I don't want to be devastated.
No, I told the lady.
I'm in therapy, everybody. I'm working on it, okay? Like, I continue.
I'm actually interviewing right now. I just feel like I am just FaceTiming my friend here. So I was also, you know, in an eating disorder. And then my daughter, who started gaining a lot of weight, and she's at her heaviest right now. I told her, don't ever look at the scale. Just, you know, go by how clothes fit. So I had to go to the hospital, and the lady weighed me, and I go, it's neurotic, but I cannot know what my weight is. Please don't tell
me. Don't tell me.
She goes, okay, how did it? Now I'm depressed, and I'm trying to get it out of my head that I'm here in the hospital for a pain on my side, but I couldn't stop thinking about my weight. How did I let myself get? What am I thinking? And then I wouldn't post pictures of myself. I was in New York this summer, and I put my arm up like that. And I was like, oh my God, my arm is flabby. When did that happen? When did I miss the memo on, you know, that in between menopause?
I was going to say, when you hit 50, that's when it happened.
I was thinking, like, menopause. Did somebody just say, stop, men, we're putting you on pause. But it's so my whole identity and being used to have to be the thinnest, the most fabulous, the everything. And then it was like, that's not who I am. I don't have to be, you know, if my hair is gray right now, this is it. If I didn't get Botox, I'm not, you know, there's no such thing as perfection. And all I've tried to do was perfect. And it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my biggest issue these days, is my imperfections are devastating to me. You know, it's very emotional. I want to go back though. You talked about Pac-Man, and I was, you know, before we started recording, we talked about that agile concept, agile self-development. And you did a beautiful job talking about Pac-Man goes, he starts eating something, he hits a wall. Well, he's just learned he can't get through the wall, turns around and tries again. And that is the idea behind the agile self-development, is we may learn. We need to learn as we go what works and what doesn't work. And now we can add up and improve our lives. I'm sure, you know, along the way, the coping mechanisms you used before therapy and the full healing were your trials to teach you what works and what doesn't work. Of course, you know, if you're like me, the universe has to slap you upside the head and you have to get the same lesson over and over before you hear it. But now you have a lot more statistical significance for what doesn't work, right? Absolutely. So if I could ask, what have you found to be, you know, the most essential part of your healing process?
Not reacting, that pause before I would, you know, action creates reaction, and I would come full force and it would create a war. Now, I do not react. It's not worth arguing or proving a point for what? To upset myself and walk around eating my kishkas up? It's not worth it.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's like all I'm doing is upsetting myself by not engaging and stepping back. It's been wonderful. That's the one thing. I stopped reacting on many things. I've learned to communicate, over communicate. And I just, you know, it took... You know, I got divorced because of the lack of awareness, and what my husband just saying, why are you lazy? Why won't you move? And I didn't realize to say my brain is tired. Like I can't think. We didn't know that. So the arguing, but now I say as a joke, you know, I'm getting a trigger. I'm on sensory overload. There's too many talking, breathing, snapping, whatever's going on. I take time out. The worst thing people could do is ignore you, turn off their phone, dismiss you. It's the most horrible thing in a relationship. Now it's like, if you say, I'm taking a time out, I'm leaving, nobody can be offended. You're saying, I need my space. You know,
right?
If you communicate all these little things that they work for me, because people are not mind readers and they don't know that, you know, the sound of bubble gum irritates me unless I say, would you mind not chewing it? You know, people don't know. So if once you over communicate and make sure they're listening and not just nodding their head, it makes for an easier life, you know, not the expectations. I put this huge thing that I project that's going to happen. And when it doesn't, it's just a crash, you know? So I have learned to just completely go with the flow. And whatever's supposed to happen, happens. Just like if I'm supposed to meet Oprah and she cancels in the morning, just wasn't meant to be. If you spill coffee on yourself you're 5 minutes delayed, you're being protected. For whatever reason, just go with it. Why am I going to go and get in a bad mood? Okay, change my shirt. Right. So, like, I couldn't find my computer, and then I found it under the couch.
Of course, where else would it be?
So I'm just like, okay, breathe, you'll get it. Instead of going, oh my gosh. So it's for myself. Forgiving people. It doesn't mean I have to hang out with you, but I understand why you're a bitch, or excuse my language, rude.
Right. I don't have to spin in it. I don't have to have my head in that story of why I hate you.
Exactly. You know? Like this one lady 10 years ago said to me, I was talking about the housewives, and she said to me, Marnie, what's the color of the sky you live in? I still cannot get over that. It was the rudest. It was insulting. Like, I didn't know that I just talked a lot when I had anxiety or, you know, were out of my situation or comfort zone. And, you know, people used to say, why don't you ever leave your house? And it's like, you want my list? You know, one, it's my safety place. I don't like going anywhere. Right. I'm not, I don't know what's going to happen. It's not just being sad. I mean, it's an umbrella underneath of things that people, when I talk, they're like, really? Because I didn't get out of my pajamas either for a week, or you too didn't shower for 3 days. So when I talk about it, I love that people know they're not alone with a lot of these symptoms I went through.
You're being authentic.
It helps me heal. Exactly. 100% true to myself. That's the name of my book, because what you see is what you get. And I, you know, when I talk about it, it heals me. Like right now, this is the best therapy, talking about my life and sharing it. And look, it was very hard. I mean, to go out there, you know, my story took Miami. I use the real names, real places, real circumstances. So there are people that are like, man, I saw my name in your book, or, ooh, you know, and I was like, well, what can I tell you? Nobody in my book is in my
book. It is what it is. You were there.
But I did it with vulnerability, and I didn't care what people said about me. That is the most, not caring. I don't care what, it's none of my business what people say about me.
Right.
I don't care either.
Yeah. Well, I read this quote from you. Instead of wondering, why is this happening to me? I began to ask myself, what can I learn from this?
Yeah. I stopped the pity party. I was like, okay, you know, enough, you know, with the violin, pity party's over, leave everybody. Let's pick yourself back up. I didn't come this far in life to just come this far to be laying on my floor, sobbing in tears. I knew there was a greater purpose for me. And I just knew that I was here to have a voice. And when I started speaking about this, I used mental wellness in my book. I was afraid to use the word mental illness, not to offend anybody. I didn't realize the whole world would end up with anxiety and depression. So I went with my gut. It's another thing. Always go with your gut. And I wrote my story, and it really healed me. And it's remarkable what the resilience people get out of it. They realize they can go through anything. What they think is a lot they're going through, they read my book, they're like, oh, honey, go take your problems. I'll take all mine back.
Yes. You know, there's a line though. I just want to throw this out there for, we've all been through trauma, right? And when I went through cancer twice, right? And so something was like, but you're still alive. Like, here's, look at the positive. And at the time, my thought was like, I missed out on paradise. If I would have died, I would have gone to heaven, and heaven is like paradise. And so it's not, you know, I don't see it the same way. But my thing turned into, why am I still here? Not, you know, why did this happen to me? Why did I get cancer? It's, why am I still here? Because most people die of the type of cancer I had.
What kind did you have?
Ovarian. And I had nearly an 8-pound tumor that, because I was so obese, was missed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But I survived. And 10 years later, I went through it again, and I survived. And, you know, it's really rephrasing the question as to, not why did I get this? Why me? Poor me? Or it's rephrasing the question into, somebody wants me around for a reason.
Yep. I don't know what it is, but 2018, I was having stomach pains. and like really bad. And it sounds like I'm like a hypochondriac, so I mentioned hospital, but I don't go to the hospital a lot. But
oh, same thing.
I had like, it was really bad stomach. I was like kneeling over. I get there in triage and like beep, beep, beep. And I'm like, something's happening. After everything calms down, they do my blood work. They come in and they said, Ms. Goldman, just making sure you go see a hematologist when you leave. I'm like, okay, whatever. Then I'm discharged and the doctor calls me. He goes, I just want to make sure you go see a hematologist. I go, you're getting very nice service, Memorial Hospital, but may I ask why? And they're like, well, I think it's cancer.
Mm-hmm.
What? What? Like the world stopped. Like there was no sound, no what? So then right. I go see this doctor and he was a very mean doctor. So my neighbor was a doctor at Memorial. So,
we'll talk of what? It probably was the same doctor I had.
Yeah. So I found a good doctor at Memorial. Love Dr. Grossman. Love him. And I, when you take the blood work, now I don't know for 2 weeks how staged I am. So now this is after I found out everything. Now 48, after 47, I'm thinking I lived a life of shit. Now I have leukemia. Just take me. Just fucking take me. I don't
know what.
Enough. Like, my God, when does it end? So it found out that I was in watch and wait, that I go for blood work every 3 months and my numbers are okay. But due to a major depression and a complete fuck up in 2021, I moved to Jacksonville and my lymph node became the size of a baseball. It was huge from the fighting and the arguing and the divorce. It was just a shit show altogether. So I go to a new oncologist in Jacksonville. And it's not my home or my Dr. Grossman. It was like this lonely feeling. And they do a biopsy, which I said to them, well, I feel anything. Do I need general or local? They're like, oh, you need just local anesthesia. You'll be fine. No, I was like laying there like an experiment on this slab. It was horrible. I mean, I still have the scar from it, but they told me I'm gonna have to start treatment. You're stage one. And I was like, oh, I can't do this. I have a physical, mental stuff that I'm still trying to figure out. God, can you just pause the physical stuff right now? And then I came back to South Florida in Cooper City and went back to Dr. Grossman and my numbers went down and he's good, like, you're right now. So, you know, and then people are like optimistic. Well, you won't die from it. You'll just die with it, my leukemia. Or if you're going to have any cancer, it's the best to have, but I'm also susceptible to getting like a 300% more chance of skin cancer, of other cancers. So, you know, I used to obsess over that. So I would hyperfixate on every single thing I had. And that was like killing me emotionally, thinking I'm going to die. Who's going to take care of my kids? I have a son, you know, with special needs.
Right.
Or a daughter. I mean, why is
that? And now how do you react?
Now it's just everything. Just, I go with the flow. It is what it is. It's just,
yeah,
okay, you know, I feel good and I don't even think about it. I just live moment by moment in my little lane, because if I look to see what they're doing in their lane, or there's no traffic when we just stay in our own lane, being the best of ourselves. I used to compare, you know, if I didn't get likes, you know, on something I posted.
Right.
You know, so once I came forward with my story, I did a full vulnerability, not caring. I went from doing things with my ego now to doing things with my soul. And that's the difference.
Excellent. I want to also mention, I think this is where I was going before, but my brain blipped. So I don't want to diminish, you and I have our traumas and we're sharing our stories. And there's that idea of, hey, you didn't die. Great. You know, what's so bad? It could have been worse. The it could have been worse solution is to me just stupid. It's stupid. But trauma, our own traumas, we all have our own stories and our own traumas. And it doesn't mean that I win because mine seem to be worse than yours. And so it's a quote that I love so much from, were you an Ally McBeal fan?
Partial. I might know it. I might not.
So Courtney Thorne Smith's character had said to her, why are your problems so much worse than everybody else's? And her answer, because they're mine.
Because, yep. What's traumatic to you is traumatic to you. Nobody else has to understand it.
Right.
Whatever traumatizes you, that's your trauma. There's no scale. It's true. Right. It's
true. What do you talk about on your podcast?
I try to make light of everything. Like this, like, ho, 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 oh, heck no. What we're saying no to this Christmas. you know, things like that. Dear Santa, all I want is self-love. So I try to take bits and pieces of my life, and I do it mostly to empower people. I'm like, why do you care what they think? Who are they? Who are the they that you care? My daughter in sororities. When she first went to University of Florida, which was a fluke she got into, it was like the miracle, like, school. And she was like, you know, I'm in a bottom tier sorority. I go, who are the tier ranking people? Like, why are you in a bottom sorority? Like, what? Could I meet them because you're not blonde? You're beneath them? And a lot of these girls think they are. If they rushed and they didn't get into this, they're crying and their lives are over. And I try to tell them, you're not defined by what, you got to love yourself. Because if you're trying to get it because you're attached to, you know, golden or whatever, delta, that's sad. That's fake. My daughter was like, I want to be in a bun with no makeup sitting on a couch eating tacos.
Right.
You know, she's like, I'm doing the real fun sorority. So, but it's just the way people are so judgy, it infuriates me. So I try to let people be who you are. I'm the Fruit Loop in a world of Cheerios. I wouldn't have it any other way. Who wants
right.
Typical? I don't say normal. Typical's boring.
What's it called? Is it Peace, Love, Marnie?
Peace, Love, Marnie.
Peace, Love, Marnie. And you're on all the podcast apps.
Yeah.
Okay. And
oh, wait. And my book. It's so drama. Remember I told you it's dramatic. It is in the NIH, the National Institute of Health, the bookstore. So right in the display window, I'm right next to Dr. Fauci bobblehead. So location. I was there and I gave him my book and the manager was not there. I go, I guarantee you, the next day I come in, he already read four chapters. And then I called a week and a half later. They're like, Marnie, it's already in the window. It's already being sold. I was just doing a follow-up. So when I tell people the story's remarkable, it's soap opera. It's Jackie Collins meets mental health.
Nice.
Okay. So,
that sounds great to me.
Right?
So they can get your book on the NIH website?
Go to Amazon.
Or your website. What's your website?
PeaceLoveMarnie.com.
PeaceLoveMarnie.com. And you also do spiritual life coaching.
Thank you, Gabby, for being my teacher, because I teach people how to have, people like, what's the difference between you and a psychiatrist? Well, I'm not trying to heal your past. I'm not trying to fix you. I'm where you are right now. I want to help you be the best version of you, help you realize you are where you're supposed to be and how you can understand and not fight where you're supposed to be right now and find that silver lining. So that's what I do. So if you tell me that you're having problems with your boyfriend. He puts the lights on when you're sleeping. He's rude and doesn't think about your feelings. I would say, well, did you express to him and communicate in a nice way? Like, babe, I need my sleep. So maybe we could not turn the light on so bright. But instead of saying, turn the fucking light off, it's a very different reaction. So the way you say things are as important as what you're saying.
That's funny. I just had the conversation with someone. It's really comes about how you frame what you're saying.
Communicate. Right? Like I'd make the emojis like real happy face so it didn't come across like, hey.
Yes. You cannot read tone of voice. And that's what the emojis help with. If I say something snarky, but I put like the tongue sticking out.
Right.
Then I'm playing with you.
Right.
I'm not insulting you on purpose. You got to be really cautious with that. So before we go into our speed round.
Yes.
Do you want to, is there anything I missed that you wanted to talk about?
No, there's just so many little things, but it's just whether I was a little girl and you have a child going through problems, a teenager, a not so teenager, whatever it is, you think of your own life in different years and scenarios, and it brings people to a place of peace and blessings. I mean, people think their life is so hard. Not that I'm comparing, but you kind of, when you have gratitude, it makes the hard times easier. Like, okay, I may not have a Rolls Royce, I don't know, but you know what? I mean, I have a car, I can get to work. When you find gratitude in the small things, it makes the not so great things easier to deal with. And that's what people can get from me.
Excellent. So you ready for your speed round?
Yep, I'm ready.
Awesome. Favorite store in person, not online?
Nordstrom's.
Last craft you made?
My collages. They're like vision board collages. They're like really cute. They're personalized and they're just really cool.
What never fails to make you laugh?
The nanny.
Oh, that's funny. My daughter used to love that. I had to think about that myself when I was writing it. And I think about, here's a little weird thing about me, everybody. I love to see little videos of toddlers or babies cursing.
Oh, love that. There was one that was like on Halloween. She was like, get the stick or something. And it sounded like, you know, what the shit. Or like, they're the funniest.
My daughter's dog is named Floki, but my granddaughter can't pronounce it. I have a little video. She calls him, fuck it. Fuck it. What? What's your dog's name? And there's me. There's funny grandma going, I got to record this. What's your dog's name? Fuck it.
Love it. Yes. Love it.
Okay. Are you more likely to sleep in late or take a nap?
Take a nap.
Favorite quote?
Stay true to yourself and everything happens for a reason.
Beautiful. I wanted to pull mine up because it's such a great reminder. Marianne Williamson, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be?
Love, love. Shine your light. Shine it. Doesn't matter. I don't care how dim people want to be. Keep shining your bright light. Intimidated by bright lights, but keep shining anyway. It's funny. I don't know how to take compliments like on Facebook. If someone's like, you look so pretty, great picture. I feel like a fraud. And a therapist said to me, you know what? By not taking it, you're not giving yourself self-love. There's nothing wrong with saying thank you.
And I would just say thank you. That's my advice to people. Just say thank you.
I would give a whole explanation. Oh, I feel so bloated today. And they're like, just say thank you. And that's what I'm learning. It's very hard. It's like people would write something and I don't know how to take compliments. So yes. It's something that I'm actively like learning how to do it, even at 52 years old.
Yeah. And by the way, I like to usually run these about a half an hour, but when conversations are going this well,
it's like tomorrow morning.
I lose track. Right. Yeah. We'll be done tomorrow morning.
Right. I'm going to call you tomorrow for coffee. I know.
I'm here. All right. Well, we've got your website. We've got the links to find you, to work with you, to get your book. We're going to put that in the show notes. So look for that in your apps or on agileselfdevelopment.com or if you follow
Peace, Love, Marnie. It's so, you know what? I am not your typical person. And I am just like this whoosh, like the lady of Publix. I'm like, how do you remember me? Because she's like, you don't walk in the room. You whoosh in a room. And I'm like, okay, I leave a little sparkle wherever I go, you know.
I had someone at Publix go, oh, you do stand-up comedy, right? I was like, am I famous at the Publix of Coconut Creek? How do you know this? Okay, I'll take it. I'm big with Jews in their 60s in the Plantation Sunrise area.
Upset.
That's my crowd.
Love it. Yeah. That's your demographic. Work it. Work the condo.
Work it.
Work them. Love it.
Marnie, this has been so much fun. I appreciate it. And I look forward to learning more.
Thank you for joining me. Visit agileselfdevelopment.com and subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right when they're released. And if you enjoyed the podcast, I'd love it if you'd leave a review in Apple Podcasts. It makes a big difference in how the podcasts are ranked. Thank you again for joining me, Helene Coppell, for this episode of Agile Self-Development. Become your best self, one version at a time. Catch you soon.